You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight, we are going to be returning to the far-off world of the Starlost in their fourth episode, The Pisces. And I think that I can safely say that whereas this episode is just going to take a short amount of time for us, for you, it's going to seem like years.
Can't imagine why.
It's that time dilation effect.
Never heard of it.
Well, now, Well, this episode, sort of The Pisces, is written by Norman Klenman, and Norman Klenman has an interesting role in the history of the Starlost. I don't really know what his background is, and I don't know what his qualifications were, but he had to pick up, supposedly, after Harlan Ellison left, and wrote, I think, 8 of the episodes, and had to, quote-unquote, considerably rewrite many others. And I think there are only 16 episodes, so I think we can safely say that Norman Klenman is probably the man who has stamped most of the nature of the Starlost upon the show. And this story is pretty bad. Unless you liked it, but I
not really, no.
No, it's this
one.
Oh, one's,
boy, I tipped my hand right away. Shoot.
Gave that one away. This one's not going to be a good one. So we're gonna plow through this one. Basically, the premise of the episode is that the Pisces, which is an exploratory craft that was out on a 10-year mission to look for habitable planets that the Ark could be headed towards, returns, and they discover that they've been gone for 409 years because of the effects of time dilation and Einsteinian physics and all, and then they get sick, and well, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, that's pretty much
it. It's not a whole lot to this story, but anyway.
We're done.
That's it. And there's not many redeeming features on this one, but there were a couple things that were worth noting. One of the things I thought was kind of interesting is there's a real production gaffe at the beginning of the episode. We see Devin and Garth and Rachel sleeping, mm-hmm. and they're in these beds, and of course there's lots of food all around, which is an interesting. They got cups and packaged food, and so obviously they're having not much trouble finding food, unlike the corridor guards from a couple of episodes ago that seem to be always on the verge of starvation. But Devin wakes up, and he's having a little bit of snack, and everybody else is asleep, and then
an alarm goes off.
This horrible klaxon is going on, and the walls kind of flash a little bit red, and after this klaxon is just going on and on, he goes over to wake up the other two. And he has to fight to wake them up. And I think, okay, production gaffe may not be the right word, but I think what this is a planning gaffe. I think there was no klaxon intended in this scene.
Correct.
I think it was the lights. And somebody looked at the scene and said, well, this is just lame. Add an alarm. And of course, then they add the alarm, which nobody could possibly have slept through. I mean, it's a real battleship alarm.
It's an alarm that would wake the dead.
Yeah, and he's like, "Come on, wake up, wake up!" And I'm like, "What do you want?" It's like, "Can you not hear the clack?" So, you know, even at the level when they're shooting these things, they're just kind of they're just putting it together by ear. The alarm is the arrival of the Pisces, which is captained by veteran actor Lloyd Bachner, who used to play in lots of shows, character actor, often the bad guy.
Yeah.
Quite good at the role of the Nazi or the pseudo-Nazi officer. Was one of his...
It's a trademark.
Trademark roles. But he could play the good guy. He was kind of a stand-up kind of guy. He and the last two remaining people arrive, and then they're all happy because they're back, finally, after 10 years. And they're a little confused by just Garth, Devin, and Rachel just kind of standing around and looking.
They don't exactly look like...
They look stoned. They are so stoned in this episode.
They look completely wasted, especially Devin. But it's their clothing. They don't exactly look like they are dressed to work as deck crew.
But they don't talk either. I mean, they just let them talk, and Devin's like, "I told you, man. The ship's like..."
Oh, don't give that one. No, not yet.
He's like that the whole time. From the minute
let's just go through the natural course before we, because I want to talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, they arrive and they encounter them and they kind of go through. I don't know. I'm gonna go on, launch into it. I mean, nothing happens in this episode except that they
Captain Garraway, he introduces his two officers, women, Captain Janice and Navigator Teal. And Garraway he comments about how he's surprised by this so-called reception that he's getting. And he talks about being gone for only 10 years. And the camera does this great bit about just training in on Devin's face. And he's a tree.
Yeah. He's a tree, yes.
He's a tree. He just stands there with this blank, this totally, just no expression on his face. And I'm thinking, okay, you've had several adventures now. You understand that the Ark has been adrift for...
hundreds of years.
For quite a few years now. And... you're looking for somebody to come in and repair the ship, and now you see these three people come off this smaller ship that is docked. They clearly have some kind of technical know-how, and yet amidst all this talking about being gone for 10 years, you are just going to stand there like you are a statue.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the logical course of action for Devin would be, I don't want, you know, you could be polite about it. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Captain Garraway, but you should understand that the ship has had a serious disaster. The crew have all been killed, and we are adrift in space for hundreds of years, and we need your help desperately. But he doesn't do that.
No.
He just kind of says, well, you know, they're not here. Like he doesn't even know why they're not there.
Exactly.
And quite a lot through the course of the entire episode, Devin is just kind of standing there. It's not even wood. It's as if they forgot to write him lines, and so as an actor, he takes that as being, I'm a blank page.
He takes it to meaning that I'm clueless, and this is completely contrary to the Devin that we are introduced to in the pilot.
Yeah.
The Devin who is consistently questioning authority, trying to understand why things are the way they are. And now, just a few episodes later, and we get this person who knows nothing. Absolutely nothing. And yet doesn't seem to have any kind of motivation to understand what's going on. He just stands there and he's a tree. He really looks like I kind of wonder if maybe amidst all those supplies there wasn't a water bong.
Yeah, something. I mean, he is really...
He's wasted.
He's out of it.
That's certainly the impression that he gives. And even when he talks, as you pointed out, I told you, there was an accident. And it's like, wow, what have you been smoking?
It's really... Anyway, he does at least tell them that there's been some sort of a explosion or something, and they... decide to go reconnoiter around the ship, and they, for whatever reason, they take Garth, Devin, and Rachel, and go, oh, hop on, and they all get on and fly around the ship. And I mean, very Star Trek the Motion Picture flyby too. of the Star Lost, only done with, you know, Dixie cups and styrofoam.
Yeah, at least with Star Trek the Motion Picture, it looked better.
And the music wasn't dreadful. But what I thought was really funny. Go ahead.
I heard that tick, 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 tick.
Oh, you did? Yes. It's dreadful,
isn't
it?
I listened for it, and now it's stuck in my head.
Well, the part I thought was funny is when they sent them to the observation dome, he tells, I forget whether it's Teal or the other woman.
Janice.
He says, put on some background music for them.
And oh, I know.
He turns on the Muzak so that they can hear music while they're watching the flyby.
So basically, we're hearing the soundtrack to the episode.
Why do they have a soundtrack? Why does a spaceship, reconnoitership, have a soundtrack for putting on in the observation lounge? It's ridiculous. What are you? And the fact that he would think about it while, you know, we're checking out why the Ark's got some sort of explosive damage. But while they're out doing the reconnoiter, they all fall asleep.
Yeah, completely pass out.
All asleep. And then when they wake the captain up, he notices that Janice is asleep, and he wakes her up, and then he chews her out for falling asleep.
Right.
So we know something's up with these people. Anyway, so they know there's an explosion. They go back in. They decide to go find their families. And they go to the crew quarters where they find a bunch of simpletons living, apparently, just fine. And that's about all there is there. Do you know my family? No. Do you know my family? Do you know so-and-so? No. They don't know anybody.
We're from the Pisces. The Pisces?
Oh.
I know the legend of that ship. It's the old patriarch, if you want to call him that. Like a septuagenarian.
Sort of the Jed Clampett of the...
Right. And he mentions that he remembers the legend of the Pisces and how it was lost hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm. They get hold of the computer, who's back with a vengeance, and they start working it out. Teal is the only one who wants to know. Of course. By the way, Captain Garraway just seems to be more interested in champagne and stuff. Through the course of this episode.
I think there's a huge case of denial. And I only kind of get that from looking at it in a retrospective
wishful thinking?
Maybe.
Wishful thinking that there was actually some subtext in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to find something redeeming in this. But no, only because every time Teal tries to speak up and say what's on her mind about what really happened, he promptly shuts her down.
He shuts her down.
So I kind of get the feeling that this was something that was brought up. They kind of imply it.
Well, she said, I told you my calculations are right. And yet
he doesn't want to hear any part of it.
Which is that they've been gone 409 years. But they think they've only been gone 10. And this is because of relativity and the speeds, because shortly after they left, they lost communication signal with the Ark, and somehow
1 year in their time.
Somehow, by losing the communication signal, the clocks could no longer synchronize between the ship
and
the Pisces, and so because they don't have a clock that's synchronized, they slipped into time dilation, and by traveling so fast that they've now come back hundreds of years later. I'm not sure how having a clock in sync would make any difference to that. That really wasn't...
No, except maybe alert you. Oh, heavens, look, the clock's acting funny. It's going a heck of a lot faster, you know, but... Now we're into some gobbledygook science again.
Yes, and of course that would just alert you, but the way they phrased it, that would have prevented it.
Well, I think
maybe they could have put on the brakes or something. But.
Right. I think the implication is the moment they see that something funny is going on with the clocks, oh heavens, hit the brakes. We're going too fast. That's the only way that I can see it. But again, I think that's gobbledygook science, and I just really can't accept that.
I'm kind of thinking that if I had been on a 10-year mission and I'd gone out, and after 1 year I'd lost communication with my home base.
I'd turn around
and head to the last known position.
Right.
You know, immediately. Because you've got to have some initiative, and that's a bad sign when you lose radio contact like that.
Right.
And of course, they're beginning to act a little weird. They fall asleep. Mostly they fall asleep, but they get a little giddy and...
There's a bit where they decide to go ahead and open the bottle of champagne, and Garraway especially just becomes this...
Gibbering Irishman.
He does.
He turns into an Irishman. I'm not saying that as mean to Irish, because I'm...
Puts on that affect.
Yeah, he gets the Irish accent while he's and he's not in any way meant to be an Irishman in this story. So it's just another piece of the puzzle. And at one point he's kind of childlike when he's kind of
that funny voice again.
Yeah, and it's the dreaded affliction, space. Senility, which apparently it comes about when you've traveled in time dilation and your body ages at the normal rate of 10 years, but your mind somehow ages not at that rate, but at a much accelerated rate, causing space senility, which is just like regular senility, only
in space.
In space. Except it can be cured by going back into high speed
time dilation. Some sort of high speed space travel, which puts you into that relativistic time dilation, which I can't see. I don't think it cures it, but I think it arrests it.
Again, this is serious, far more worse gobbledygook than some of the other gobbledygook that they've had on this show. This one's just...
Yeah, this like, one's bad.
How do we come up with a way that they can't get help again? Oh, we find three people who could help, and then we give them a choice of leaving so we don't have to kill them, or we turn them into gibbering useless idiots so there's no point in keeping them around. Again, you know, they're going way out on the line to find a way to prevent them from getting anywhere in this show, which is really the tragedy of the show, is that if they can't find a solution, because if they do, then the show's over.
Well, here's the thing that bothers me about that. Since you've already brought that up, I'll jump to... Well, do you want to talk about the big plot development about the Pisces taking off?
Well,
get into that?
We can, I guess. If we want to do that before the philosophical ramifications.
Well, go ahead.
I'd forgotten all about that part, and that was like the major part of the episode.
Well, because it actually touches on something you just said. So.
Okay. Well, they are on board the ship having a booze up, quite literally. Having dinner and drinking, and obviously Rachel's getting plowed for the first time in her life, and I mean that in the alcoholic sense.
And of course,
although Garraway looks like he's going to working at it in
the literal sense,
and he's putting on his full Irish charm for it.
Devon is regaling them with these ridiculous stories about things that he tells a story about. It's like right out of Huckleberry Finn.
When he
barging in on his own funeral.
Yeah.
And it's just this big comedic tale that he's sharing. And again, this feels like very inappropriate. Well, meanwhile, Garth is having googly eyes for Navigator Teal.
And she's googling him back, too, a little bit. She gives him a little bit. You know, he's getting some sympathy cuddles there from her. And, in fact, at one point, she tells him she loves him. Although not in the traditional sense. He wants to understand her problem, so she explains Einstein and relativistic physics to him in words that a third grader could understand.
Yes.
And he still doesn't understand it. And she says, "Garth, I know you can't understand it. But I love you for it.
Yeah.
And it's looking
bad
like
dialogue.
Oh, yeah. But it's looking like Garth is going to get a little bit of action there, because, I mean, he has been kind of left out since Rachel dumped him.
Dumped him.
Yeah. I was kind of rooting for him there a little bit, but it was not to be, because Teal and Janice decide that they have to immediately get on the Pisces. Well, they're on the Pisces. They have to take over, launch the ship, and head back to Earth.
Well, there is something that does happen during this entire drunken fest. Garraway says, show them the pictures. So we now have home movies.
Yep.
Of a sort.
Okay, that would be a good reason for trying to escape.
And they come across a photo. Janice,
okay, I know what part you're going for.
Right. Janice says, now, we discovered this unusual phenomenon. An unidentified Class G solar star. Okay, as opposed to a lunar star?
Yes, and it is exactly the words that the computer uses.
That the computer uses, too.
When it's talking about they're going to collide with it. And now, what are we, three-quarters of the way through the episode?
Yeah.
That's when Devon mentions... That's what the computer said.
That's what the how do you call it?
Projector.
Yeah, the projection in the
screen
bubble.
Projector.
Yeah, screen projector in the bubbles. That's exactly what it said.
We're going to collide and also, with a Class 3 unidentified Class G
solar star. And now everybody's instantly sober. I mean, I didn't see much drinking done by Teal, and I don't think Janice had anything to drink at all because she's just way too depressed. But Garraway completely sobers up on this news, and now it's time to do some computations. Time to figure out, is this the star that the Ark is going to collide with?
And who cares? Who cares which star they're going to collide with?
Doesn't matter.
This is a piece of information that Devon should have told them back in the
landing bay when they first meet.
There's been an accident. We're going to collide with a star. Please help us. But no.
This is key. I mean, you'd think that... instead of just saying, I told you there was an accident. I mean, okay, can you describe the nature of the accident? Can you describe what's going to happen as a result of this accident? No. He just stands there like a tree and repeats, there was an accident. Now he finally shares this vital piece of information. Very bad.
We're all going to die. And we don't know when. And you know, just the coincidence of one Class G star. I think at some point they said that Earth was Sol was a Class G star. So this is just an ordinary Earth-like...
Just another Earth-like sun.
Sun, yeah. It just happened to be that they saw something like that out the window and blah, blah, blah.
I just want to know who was the idiot who came up with that terminology, that phrase, unidentified... Class G solar star. I'm sorry. I'm just really stuck on that. I heard it and thought, lame. Really, really lame.
I know. Class G. Give me a break. But that is what prompts... that's what prompts Janice and Teal to decide to take the ship and get the heck out of there so that they can save their own bacon and get back into space so that they won't go senile.
And go to Earth, of all places.
Yes. Despite the fact somebody says, well, Earth was destroyed. Well, who knows what happened to it?
Well, Devon points it out. He says, it was destroyed in the Holocaust. I thought, oh, okay. Now you've decided to become smart and share another, a timely piece of information.
Well, now they of course, knew that. They should have known that. And one thing that I don't know was readily apparent from the dates and stuff that they gave. But the Pisces left the ship about 100 years after
the launch.
It left Earth. Yeah. It's like, I think 2285 was the launch of the Ark, and 2381 was the launch of the Pisces. And so, apparently 2382 was the accident, because it happened about a year after they left, so these people have been on the ship for their whole lives. mean, Galloway's not 100 years old, so
no.
they were born and raised on the Ark.
On the Ark.
And they should be well steeped in the knowledge of you know, what happened to the Earth. So they should know that the Earth is destroyed. I think this is just wishful thinking or senility on their part. It's like, oh, well, okay, you know, it might have fixed itself by now, or maybe it wasn't as bad as people thought, or, and all of that may very well be true. But, of course, they just launch off and take Devon, Garth, and Rachel without even asking.
Not so much as a buy or leave.
Yeah. I mean, it seems very rushed and hurried, and they launch off, and of course, Galloway's yelling at him, you know, let me in, I'm captain, because he's kind of sealed off in the back with Garth and Rachel, and Devon is sealed off in the front with Teal and Janice. And he just, you know, with a little clever work from the words of the captain, he's able to sabotage the ship while they're standing there with a stun gun on him, and force them to open the door, let the captain in, and once they've let the captain in, now, well, we have to take his orders because he's the boss. I mean, they don't really resolve the mutiny very well. It's like, once he's through the door, then fine, we have to take his orders. But as long as he's on the other side of that door, we can mutiny, all right.
And he seems to be just as... Well, his reaction to this is just as equally weird. When he talks about, you know, you've committed mutiny, I should throw you in the brig. And Teal says, well, who would be here to keep you company and pilot your ship?
What, and you mean I still have a crew?
Have a crew? Oh, please.
So, yeah. It just strange. So anyway, once they have that little group bonding moment, they take Rachel, Devon, and Garth back to the ship, they let them off, and they leave, and everyone's happily ever after, and
nothing's been resolved. It's like... It's status quo.
Yep. It's
and this is one of the things that really bothered me about this episode, because there's a line that when Devon at one point is trying to convince Teal, I mean, because he realizes Janice is just she's obsessed and there's no reasoning with her, but he thinks he can get through to Teal. And he tells her the importance of not trying to be selfish. Think about all the people, all the lives on the ship. Yes, you've got space senility, but you know, your bodies are fine. Space senility is of the mind. Maybe this can be overcome. You don't know. And shouldn't you be thinking about all these hundreds of thousands of people on the Ark who are going to die if we don't do something? So that kind of – I mean, while it's not – the most effective argument, it does cause enough of, I guess, a little confusion, a little bit of a delay.
Frankly, it should have been enough.
It should have been enough.
It should have been enough.
But it wasn't.
You know, this is a... It's a hard put yourself in such a situation. But, I mean, everyone on board that Ark has created that Ark or has been part of that arc to save the human race. That's their goal. That's what they've been doing for the last 10, to find a planet to save the human race.
And now you by running away, you are basically signing their death sentence.
Yep. And, yeah, so it doesn't really make sense. However, there is one piece that I should mention. It's a throwaway line earlier in the episode, and it changes my perception of the history of the Ark.
I wonder if this is it the one line that Garraway says when they try to pick him up?
Which is...
I am not a veteran of the Dome Wars.
That's exactly right.
I caught that and I thought, whoa, what are you talking about? Something, was there a kind of a civil war on the Ark?
Well, I mean... Clearly, he wasn't alive on Earth, so there must have been some sort of civil war on the Ark before the Pisces left. Yes, I think that's the only way you can interpret that. I mean, maybe they all lived in domes on the Earth, but...
But he wouldn't have been alive for that.
Right.
And maybe what? And maybe as a result of this, it forced whoever was in charge to seal the biospheres.
Yes, perhaps.
So that no one from each, no one from inside, unless they were given a key and only certain people were allowed to have keys, certain people in authority, could get out. I mean, you know, I'm inferring a lot of things here.
Right.
But it you can't help but think about it based on that throwaway line.
I know. All I could think of was the Clone Wars. They could make a whole nother series out of this.
Oh, let's show it on the Cartoon Network.
Yes. George Lucas could make the Dome Wars.
That's right.
And or maybe Harlan Ellison could come back and do that one. In a whole nother chapter in the history of the Ark.
I don't know. I just can't imagine a CGI mustache like Devon's.
Well, 400 years ago, mustaches like that were out of style. And frankly, actually, CGI is the only way I can imagine that mustache. I can kind of see that mustache in the CGI kind of Clone Wars animation style, where they kind of get the angular shapey things, and then they just kind of
that's true.
Yeah, I think they should animate Devon instead.
I tell you, you know, it might actually improve Star Lost.
I would love to see the DVDs where they redid the special effects and put out the new version with all computer generated. I bet these stories would be a lot better.
No, they wouldn't. Now, who's got the wishful thinking?
I was being a little bit whimsical, I do believe.
More like absurd.
The Pisces looks so bad.
Oh, it's such a terrible ship.
It is such a terrible model. I mean, it looks like it's made of paper. It looks like it's construction paper that they've folded up and shaped, and it's an origami spaceship. And, you know, the model work is like, tilt it this way, no, now tilt it that way.
Well, there's a great bit where Garraway, over the communication line, he gives the impression that he's actually that he's talking to Janice and Teal, when in reality he's really giving a somewhat coded message to Devon about the reactor.
We can't make it without the reactor that's right there in front of you, that's all
right.
Yellow and stuff, Devon, that you probably don't know what a reactor looks like, but it's the thing right in front of you, and if it were, like, torn out by hand and fell down, what would happen?
Yes, but Janice, keep an eye on it to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yes, maybe
so
not
Devon
quite that.
So Devon rips it out, and I mean, I know people have mocked Star Trek, the classic series, whenever the Enterprise got hit with something, you know, big explosion, whatever, you know, the big camera tilt kind of thing. I swear, if any of those people, any of those critics, if they were to watch the Star Lost, specifically this episode, and the scene where the Pisces was being just tossed to and fro, they would never complain about how that was done in Star Trek ever again. Because this was just laughable.
I think that sums this episode up pretty good. It's just laughable.
The one thing at the very end, you've already pointed this out. They drop, you know, they do turn around, they drop off Devon, Rachel, and Garth, and then just take off. This, I really found this insulting on so many levels. It's right up there with Rachel and Garth not wanting to wake up any more doctors. Oh, and there—that's something else. That's something else. When it was first suggested that maybe Janice was not well.
Mm-hmm.
It was either Janice or Garraway. One of them was not well, and the other suggested, "Oh, you know, we really need a doctor." And what does Rachel say?
We've been there. There's no one there.
There's no one there. Rubbish. There are a few empty containers, but there were people in there. So
and
it's like, oh, we completely forgot what happened just 2 weeks earlier.
And, of course, these people could have gone into those containers.
Yes, and it would have saved their lives. So, again, really bad storytelling, and...
Well, until they hit the Class G solar star. So I guess you could argue that if getting into suspended animation on a ship heading towards certain destruction is might not be preferable to just flying off and trying to find your way back to the home world to arrive there and then become senile and die. But
even then, at least in the second episode, we did have that one communications engineer. At least before they put him back in, he was able to give them some kind of clues.
These people could have helped them figure out somebody to wake up.
Precisely. They did nothing except fly off.
These episodes appear to exist in a vacuum from one another.
They that's really...
They're domed off.
There's no continuity. They are domed off. There is no... There's total discontinuity from episode to episode, not just in terms of story elements, Rachel not remembering that there were people in the medical bay, Devin's behavior, but their recollections are off. Their behavior is off. Devin did this. This was a completely different Devin than the one we saw the week before, where he's flicking towels and having staff fights.
Yes, and obviously, maybe we'll see a little bit of continuity. I have to admit, I've been going through my DVD collection this evening, and I was looking at the Starlost disc, and I realized that when I got the Starlost, I haven't watched them all yet. I've only gone through about half of them, so I haven't. I mean, I'm ahead of you, but. I've watched maybe 8, and then I don't know whether that's when we started doing Fusion Patrol or what, but I just never got past that, so I don't know. But from the 8 I've seen, there is zippo continuity. None. Even though apparently 8 episodes were written by this Klenman guy.
Well, I know that there will be some continuity.
One alien.
Only,
comes
the alien
back.
Aura.
Comes back when, for a second episode.
But when he comes back for the second episode, there is some continuity there.
I have really nothing else to say about it, but there is one thing that I should comment on. Captain Garraway did try the worst pickup line in the history of humanity on Rachel when he was trying to drunk her up. And that was, "You'd be pretty in a spacesuit." I mean, really?
Please.
You really fill out that airlock. That was absolutely the silliest thing I've ever heard. I mean, I know it's kind of like the extremely annoying line to me in Star Trek II, where Khan says, "Do you know the old Klingon saying?"
"Oh, the old Klingon proverb, revenge is a dish best served cold." And I thought, what?
Exactly.
Where did you pull that one out?
You know, that's a Chinese proverb.
Right.
And Khan wouldn't know much about
Khan
the Klingons.
Khan wouldn't know anything about Klingons anyway.
Or very little of what he read years ago, and he does have a great brain, but still, he would know the Chinese proverb.
Yeah, but to call it a Klingon, I mean, he keeps referring to Klingon proverbs, and where did you get these?
Yeah.
You don't have any Klingon literature.
This is just a poor writer, a example of a poor writer in that instance, taking something, transposing it into a spacey setting so that it sounds...
It
spacey.
Sounds like it sounds appropriate, but it doesn't. It sounds ridiculous.
But a spacesuit is like the last thing.
It's the last thing makes any person look sexy.
Yeah, I mean, they've just So it was just the silliest thing. I had to mention that. So don't watch this episode. Just skip it.
Along with the previous three.
Along with the previous three. But we do hope you'll continue to listen to us bash on the episodes.
Yeah.
Because I can only hope they're going to get worse. And one of the reasons I do know...
You can only hope?
I can only hope that they give us... No, this episode didn't give us enough stuff to pick on. To me, I mean, this episode was so light that it was just like, okay, there's a little bit here and there, and it's kind of stupid, but...
Well, that's its biggest flaw, is that, okay, what little they gave is completely ridiculous, and it's just that. It was very, very little.
It was very, very little.
Shouldn't have been very, very little.
I'm really looking forward. There's an episode which I have not seen that involves giant bees. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know about
that. It's like the second to last episode.
Yeah, I stopped watching the series.
Giant mutant bees.
If I remember right, I don't know the episode order, because again, it's being syndicated here, syndicated to the U.S., and I have no idea what kind of order they were showing it in.
Syndicated here, syndicated there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere.
Yeah, stop it. It was. It was just so hard to keep track of the show because they kept moving it around on different channels.
Hiding in embarrassment.
So there's a lot that I never saw. There's a lot that I don't remember. And I think that's just for the sake of sanity.
Got anything else?
Only that this is... You know how we comment about how with the Man of Atlantis, it just kept going down and down and down and down?
Yep.
Well, I'm kind of getting that feeling here. These Starlist episodes, they started off not even mediocre. Maybe with a sense of there could have been something there if they had done it right with the pilot, but it's just been sliding down ever since. And as I thought the second episode was worse than the pilot, the third episode was worse than the second one. This has been the worst one I've seen so far. I can only imagine how bad this show is going to get before we get to the end.
Well, there is such a flawed... It's a flawed premise. It shouldn't be a flawed premise, but it is a flawed premise, and I'll expound upon that for a moment or two. If you look at the setup, which is we've got this massive ship which has essentially an infinite number of domes on it. I mean, it clearly is a finite number, but it's so many that in the context of a TV series, it's infinite. They could go for years, episode to episode, and go to a different dome. And
have an anthology series of sorts.
I'm sure that's what Ellison was trying to set up.
I do too.
That they were going to go from dome to dome.
As they looked for help. But then you kind of get caught up in whatever drama existed within each dome, and maybe have the search for help be the connecting thread.
It's the Fugitive, the Incredible Hulk, Route the Pretender, 66. Yeah, any show like that where you're just traveling around and you've got some good people, and they help some other good people who are having some problems, and then they move on in their perpetual quest. And every once in a while, maybe every 10 episodes or 20 episodes, they get a little bit of nugget on their journey, but not enough to solve the problem, but to keep the viewer interested and to keep the overall story a little bit. But they don't do that. I mean, if they spend their time in the crew areas of the ship, where they are incapable of learning, and there is no one to teach them, that isn't going to happen. That's what I mean by the premise is flawed, because they're not even following the premise that seems to be what's set up for the show. Well, in that case, next week, we will be looking at the next episode of UFO. I can't wait. I like.
I do too. You know, last episode notwithstanding.
Oh, see, now I like the last episode. No, wait, which was the last episode we reviewed?
Tea in the Midlands.
Oh, we haven't reviewed the next one yet.
No.
I've watched it.
You're ahead of me.
I just watched it a week or so ago, but we haven't reviewed that one yet. Oh, that's one of my favorites.
I don't have it yet.
Oh.
So I haven't been able to watch it.
Oh, I love that episode. Okay. So we hope everyone will, all of you out there in podcast land, will join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Fusion Patrol podcast. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at feedback@fusionpatrol.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fusionpatrol, or look for us on Facebook. Fusion Patrol is a production of Lone Locust Productions. Our theme music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.